Have you ever heard something like, you should be ashamed just for being your true, authentic self? Then Teología Sin Vergüenza might be the place for you. We are queer, trans, feministas from Latin America and its diaspora who aren't ashamed of our faith or our activism. Our weekly conversations offer a space for reflection, analysis, and spiritual reclamation as we try to navigate home, faith, familia, and identity. So grab a cup of coffee, whether it's café con leche, café cubano, café de olla, tinto, chorreado, or americano. Join us for the deep dive into the lives of theologians, elders, activists, and everyday saints as we talk about decolonial faith, gender justice, sexuality, and sacred resistance. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. And for all of those who feel like you aren't enough of this or too much of that, ni de aquí, ni de allá, you belong here. Join us for shameless faith conversations about real life right now that you won't find anywhere else. You might just realize that you are a sinvergüenza too.
Axis Mundi.
Hello, friends. My name is Nadia Arellano. I am the Associate Director at Soulforce and one of the people who has helped create Teología Sin Vergüenza in Spanish during the last few seasons. I am here today as your host for Soulforce's Friday from the Archives, a monthly deep dive into something special from the collection of content that we've created over the last two decades. Soulforce exists to end the religious and political oppression of LGBTQIA+ people by breaking open the ideologies of Christian supremacy and healing our community's spirits from spiritual violence. During the last 25 years, we've created books, pamphlets, trainings, and lessons. We've given sermons and keynotes and conferences around the world. We've hosted roundtables and webinars. Friday from the Archives is our chance to share some of this content with you. Today, we bring you a sermon that Reverend Alba Onofrio, also known as Reverend Sex, delivered as part of the Episcopal Church's Gender Justice Jam in 2025, in conjunction with Shelley Gupta Barnes and Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris at the Cairo Center for Religious Rights and Social Justice. We bring this sermon to you today because it is a powerful and liberating conversation in which Reverend Alba breaks open Genesis 1 to explore what it means to be made in the image of God beyond the gender binary. Drawing from Soulforce's free resource, The Gender of God and Creation, Reverend Alba challenges traditional clobber passages and invites all of us to see how the Hebrew text, poetic structure, and divine names reveal a God who holds all genders and expressions within the sacred image. Reverend Alba reimagines male and female as representing the full, beautiful spectrum of humanity, much like the sacred in-betweens of day and night or land and sea. The episode also highlights feminine and plural imagery for God, such as Elohim, Ruach, Sophia, and the nurturing mother hen, to show that divine identity is expansive, creative, and beyond human boxes. This episode is an invitation to encounter the divine as he, she, and they, a God of radiant diversity who delights in everybody, every gender, and every expression of love.
I want to introduce and reintroduce Reverend Alba, who I think is just going to kind of take from here. They are an amazing leader and are running an amazing organization. And I can't wait to have you all study the Bible with them a little bit right now. So Reverend Alba, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you to all of the Kairos team and all of our interpreters. We're so grateful. I feel honored and grateful for those who provide more access and provide platforms for us to have these really juicy conversations. Phoebe, I believe you're going to help me with the slides. So if you'll pull up the first one, I'm just going to jump right in. should just say, I just want to say a little bit about who I am, where I'm coming from. I'm currently in Querétaro in Mexico, happily working on a book about spiritual violence and healing from spiritual violence for our organization, Soul Force. I grew up in Appalachia in Western North Carolina, Southern Baptist, and I now am the executive director of Soul Force. And lots of other things that you can see on the little slide. You can find me at Reverend_sex on Instagram and Facebook. That's because I talk about sex, gender, religion, sexuality. I'm grateful, grateful, grateful for the invitation and to be in your space today. I'm going to try to talk slowly for our interpreters, but I get excited because I love the Bible. So please, interpreters or whoever, if you need me to slow down, just remind me to do that because I get excited. I love the Bible. I grew up with it as the literal word of God, and I have moved away from that position since then, but I still just am incredibly passionate about the Bible. Will you take us to who Soul Force is and what we're doing? The next one? Yeah. So Soul Force has been around for almost 27 years now, originally started by Reverend Dr. Mel White and his husband, Gary Nixon. And we work on ending the political and religious oppression of LGBTQIA plus people. And we do that right now through ideological change work. And that's particularly in the world of theological education and healing from spiritual violence. So we are so grateful for the invitation and we're so grateful to be here. At the end of this like 10 slide presentation Bible study, I will have a link, a QR code to our whole library of free accessible resources. I think the Reverend Doctor said that y'all had gotten those resources before, but I will give you another link to that screen. They're all free for download. They're in seven, most of them are in seven different languages if you have folks in other places who want access to them. So that's a little bit about Soul Force. Okay, so I've been told that y'all have already talked a little bit about Genesis, so please feel free to add any additional information of things that you already know. I hope that this won't be a repeat, but it's always worth revisiting, especially this time of year, especially in Trans Day of Remembrance. One of the things that Soul Force is best known for is not being scared of the Bible and not being scared of theology, but being also very respectful of both. I am an ordained Christian minister, non-denominational Christian minister out of a church in Asheville, North Carolina, which is where I'm from. So most often when we hear these, what are called clobber passages, things that are used against LGBT people, we have this image of the people that I come from, the Bible thumpers who have the Bible and use it as a weapon, whether that's physically knocking on your door or whether that's spiritually through this is what the Bible says. So I really think it's important for us to get good at and practice looking at what the text actually says, looking at the different interpretations and talking through that. So one disclaimer before I get started is a really important strategy of white Christian supremacy. Well, maybe I should say, what is white Christian supremacy? It's the use of Christianity, the stealing of the text, the wolf in lamb's clothing of saying, this is what God says, this is what the Bible says, this is what theology says, but it's not used with a clean heart or clean hands. It's rather used as a tool to keep those who have been in power, the rich with their money, and keep everybody else in a status that's a little bit less than human so that whatever happens to us is kind of our own fault. So just like many of us know, the religious right starting in the 80s, 1979, 1980, with the moral majority created this idea that the way to get conservative voters on a voting block was through basically the antagonism and oppression of LGBT people. Like there was literally a call with Jerry Falwell and others that were like, what topics? Abortion, LGBT people, et cetera, et cetera. We got the first swing, basically. So I say all that to say, I come to the text as a queer woman mother, cisgender, but and deep in queer and loving community with trans people, non-binary people. So how I see the text is going to be different than how somebody historically would have seen the text if they were raised in a different environment or if the identities and experiences that they carry in their bodies are different. The difference between what is traditional or the truth, as we're often told, and someone like me who's a queer feminist theologian, is that we are honest about this is my, when I look at the text, this is what resonates with me. This is what stands out with me. And the status quo or the traditional way is the way that some other people or group of people, usually elite, usually men, usually within an institution of a church, that's the way that they saw it. But they had the power to enforce this as this is the truth. So we believe in lots of ways to interpret the text. And so what I'm giving you today in Genesis 1 is one of those ways, and it comes from the lens of a queer and feminist theologian. So it's important to be honest about not staking a claim to the truth, but rather one way that we can look at the text. And when you have more than one way, of which there are many, endless, countless numbers of ways to interpret texts, then we have an ethical choice to make about how we choose, which of the options that we choose. When we are talking about this one, for example, Genesis 1:27, we're trying to decide, does the Bible say that God created only man and woman as only two categories of gender? And for those of us at SoulForce and people who do this work from a queer and feminist lens, given the choice between interpreting the text in a way that causes harm and death and heaviness for our siblings, in a way that opens up the text to new ways of feeling and thinking that embrace, love, and accept our queer and trans siblings, that's not a hard choice for some of us, but we understand that it's a very big deal to move from what we've always been taught to a new and different way of believing, but believing that God is still speaking constantly and that the mystery of God is much bigger than anything we can wrap our minds around. That's how we stay open to new thoughts, new ideas, new ways to see old text and ancient text that honor the God, a wildly loving, creative God. So that's my disclaimer before we jump into the text. I love the chat and seeing what's happening in the chat. I can't really see the chat when we have the slides at the same time. So I would love it if maybe Phoebe or whoever can like be like, there's things in the chat, because I actually really love questions, thoughts, concerns, and I'll pause periodically to go back to the chat. So if you're like, I don't understand what that means, or that doesn't make sense, or what about what Paul said and wherever, I love that, because we're here to be in the thick of things. We're not scared of questions. We may not have the answers. The more I learn, the less I know in lots of ways. So please put the things that you're like, I really need to know this, or I don't want to offend anybody, but I have this question or this concern. This is a space I'm saying clearly for my space anyway. I love those questions that are brave. I love those questions that are honest. I love those questions that are like, this feels a little bit tricky and I'm not trying to be combative. I'm like, bring them all. Let's talk about them. Let's jump through them. We don't have a lot of time, but I do just want to say, like, I so welcome the bravery of bringing the things that are on our hearts and on our spirits into the space to talk through together. Okay. I'm going to stop with that. Move into the text, and then I want to, if we have time, I'm going to try to be mindful of time. I would love to have a few minutes for people to discuss, ask questions, and all that stuff. So I'm going to go through this. All the content that I'm reading and working off of today is part of a resource that's free for download on our website called The Gender of God and Creation. So Genesis 1, breaking open Genesis 1, the gender of God and creation, is where you can find many more words and questions and prayers and all of that stuff in that, if you want to look more on our website. Yes, so question about clobber passages. Clobber, like as in like to clobber someone, right? Clobber. The phrase clobber passages is a term that we use in queer world when we're talking about the set of scriptures of which, depending on who you are, that's between 7 and 10 scriptures, which are kind of the only places in the Bible that people pull from to say, God thinks that homosexuality is bad. God thinks that being trans is bad. God thinks that, you know, whatever these things that are used to say, this is the proof, right? So an example of that is people say being homosexual is an abomination because it says in Leviticus, right? The reason we call that a clobber passage is because just one chapter later, a few verses down the chapter, right, we have eating shrimp as an abomination. So people choose to say this way of living, loving, being is an abomination, but no one is standing outside of, you know, the local restaurant seafood joint pointing at people and yelling at them that they're an abomination because they're eating shrimp dinner with French fries, right? So that is what we talk about. That is the concept known as clobber passages. And us LGBT people, especially those of us who come out of religious contexts, spend a lot of time really worrying about and poring over what the Bible says or doesn't say, because many of us start out life being told that who we are is not okay with God. So a lot of us have spent a lot of time working on those specific Bible verses. Thank you for the question. All right, let's jump into Genesis. I have been told that y'all had a conversation about how there's two creation stories, probably how those two creation stories don't match. And one of them, humans are the pinnacle of creation, meaning the last thing created. And the other story, humans are created somewhere in the middle, you know, before the animals, but after the garden. So that's amazing. We're going to go even deeper in the first creation story, which is in the first chapter of Genesis. And in this one, God creates humankind kind of at the same moment, lots of people, which for those of us who have questions about incest and how could God only have two humans and all the human population come from that, we might lean toward the first story in which humankind is created kind of as a group and everyone's created at the same time. So let's start with Genesis 1:27. Now, in most of our Bibles, we translate God as he, and in an understanding of God that is more expansive, I basically took out the words he and replaced the he with God so that we have Genesis 1:27, where we're just saying God rather than making God a he or a father. So God created humankind in God's own image. In the image of God, God created them. Male and female, God created them. So this passage gets used a lot to say God only made male and female, and God doesn't make mistakes. So trans people are not allowed to express their full humanity or alter their bodies in any way, shape, or form. Though, again, I don't see anybody standing in front of the plastic surgery clinic yelling at women who want a breast enlargement or a breast reduction or a nice butt or whatever. So, again, we have to pay attention to where things are chosen to be called out. But sticking with the text as it says, male and female, God created them. That is one of those verses. And so we want to go a little bit deeper into that. Phoebe, will you take us to the next one? Okay. The question is, so we call that, this is called Imago Dei, image of the divine. So the Imago Dei we hear often in theological circles of what makes us special as humans is that we are created in the image of God, that God finds us good in the creation story. So the question I hear most often is, what about people who don't fit into these categories of male and female or man and woman? This includes trans people who move from one category to the other. This includes non-binary people, genderqueer people, agender people, this whole group of wonderful, sometimes complicated words that people who are new to our community are like, I can't keep them all straight. The whole group that we're talking about are people who do not fit solidly in this box of male and female, man and woman. There are many, 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 many ways that we identify ourselves, and they are beautiful and creative. And you actually don't have to understand all of them to just understand that the debate at hand is whether or not God made more than two boxes in terms of our gender for us to fit in. So this is the question I get asked almost every place I go. So this is the one we're tackling today. All right, Phoebe, next one. Okay, now we're going to go a little bit deeper into the words. There's this figure of speech called a merism. Merism, M-E-R-I-S-M, merismo in Spanish, merism. And I didn't learn about this until way later in my life than I needed to know about it. But it's basically this figure of speech, and I was an English teacher for 9 years, so forgive me for my little nerdy grammar moment, but it's a figure of speech that basically talks about a whole category in shorthand by just picking up the endpoints. So let me give you an example from my childhood. I lived with my great grandmother, and Granny would lose the keys, and she would say to me, "I looked high and low for those keys and I couldn't find them anywhere." That was a pretty regular refrain. I looked high and low for this, high and low for that. That doesn't mean that we looked on top of all of the shelves and we looked under the sofa, but we didn't look on the table. We didn't look, you know, on the bed. We didn't look at the nightstand. It means I searched high and low, which means I searched from the top to the bottom and I couldn't find them. As in, I searched everywhere. That's an example of a merism. And we have a lot of those. We have a lot of those in our common everyday kind of language. That's what's happening in Genesis 1. Okay, Phoebe, next slide. Let's look at some examples. Genesis 1, verses 3 through 5. This is where God says, you know, speaks into creation, day and night, the first day, right? Separate the light from the darkness. One is the day, one is the night. And it says, you know, it was the day, it was night, the first day, right? No one ever will say to you, "Oh my Lord, that beautiful sunset, what an abomination," because God only made light and dark. And it's just a switch and we just flip it and it goes from day to night. No, right? We understand that when God said, "I made light and separated from the darkness," that means we have twilight, we have sunset, we have that moment right before dark where everything looks black and like in the shadows. It's so gorgeous. It's my favorite time of day. And in the morning, we have the aurora that like just the first hints of light, and then the sun pops up over the horizon. All of that spectrum we understand in Genesis 1, 3 through 5, when it says day and night. It doesn't say twilight, doesn't say sunset, doesn't say sun, just says day and night, just says light and dark. That's it. We have another one, Genesis 1, 9 through 10. God separates the dry land from the water. Again, I have never in my life heard anyone say to me, "Well, you know, those mangroves with all that diversity and all of the swampland," which I come from North Carolina, so we have a lot of the swampland. "Well, that's just an abomination. God never intended that." Or the beach, my goodness, those shorelines where it's the sand touches the water, that's just sacrilegious. You shouldn't ever do touch that. That's not of God, right? We never hear that, because when it says God made the dry land and separated it from the water, we're not talking about a cement swimming pool. We're talking about the whole of the universe, the whole of the planet, the ocean floor, the shoreline, the dry land, the ponds. We're talking about all of that. This is an example of merism. So Bible scholars, those of us who choose to interpret the text this way, look and see this series of things where God creates this from that, this from that, this from that. And that whole structure is called merism, where you're using the two endpoints, the driest part of the land and the wettest part of the water, but you mean the whole range of the planet's surface, including the mountains and the ponds and all that stuff. And then we get from verse 3 through 5, 9 through 10 keeps on going. And then eventually we get to verses 26 and 27, where we're talking about male and female. So in this interpretation of Genesis 1, that's the idea that we have masculinity on one side, which, by the way, changes depending on when you live, where you live, what culture you live. Technically, Jesus wore dresses, if we're going to be picky about it, you know. Masculinity gets assigned long hair, short hair, facial hair, no facial hair, earrings, whatever, right? So masculinity on one side, that's very culturally, time, geography specific, and femininity on the other side. And almost all of us, regardless of when we live, are somewhere in the spectrum. So what if we imagine God that can hold this entire spectrum of gender, that says, I created all of it, and all of it is in my image, rather than just one being like, only men can be ordained, only men can speak, because that is what was made in my image. No, humankind, all of us made in the image of the divine. So if you ever hear people having conversations about Genesis 1 and, well, God only made male and female, it says right there in Genesis 1, it says also God only made the day and the night, or the dry land and the water. And you can say, well, what about, how do you feel about sunsets? Because I really like them, right? And I look at some of our beautiful gender conforming, gender non-conforming siblings. You know, to be honest, I say most often, I really believe that God is probably a drag queen. Because when I look at all of the colors, I love fruit and I love flowers. And the colors and textures and flavors of all the fruit and all the flowers that we have, to me, I'm like, well, God must be a drag queen, because some of the gaudiest flowers I've ever seen came directly from God making them. So I just feel like we as humans and our gender expressions with our colors and textures and sizes and shapes, we just fit right into this very, you know, bright and colorful array of God's beautiful creation. So that's my take on Genesis 1, not just mine. I didn't invent anything new. I just cobbled together lots of thought of other people's and put them in hopefully a more accessible resource, because, you know, they give us those fancy books that we pay a lot of money for, and then nobody can really read them or understand them. We go to the next one, Phoebe. There's one more thing I want to say before I close our little time together, which is about the gender of God. Now, most of us grew up only hearing God as he, with the images of king and warrior and father. And we're told, because of how translations work in the Bible, we're told that God is a he. And some of us are told that the Holy Spirit is a he. And so I want to just leave us with a little bit of other examples. These are all examples of places in the Bible where God self-identifies, or where a person identifies God in a feminine orientation. So in Hosea, as God as a mother bear, or as a birth giver in Deuteronomy, or as a midwife, or as a mistress. And even Jesus says, oh, ye daughters of Jerusalem, I wish that I were a mother hen and could just gather y'all all under my wings. But, you know, here we go down this path of crucifixion and Easter. There are examples. We also have lots of other ones that we could go into deep detail about around gender, like Ruach, or the breath of Jesus, the Shekinah, or the thing that guides the Israelites through the desert, which is also feminine. The Holy Spirit, which for many of us is a feminine force, Sophia, or wisdom. We have many, many, many of those examples that are all worth their own study. But I just want to like plant the seed that even in the text, it does not mean God is exclusively male, even if we're using a literal interpretation of the text and what it says. One more, Phoebe, I think, is the last one. Last thing. And this is important because it's talking about the gender of God and how God makes people in God's image. This word Elohim, I love all the names for God in the Bible, and it's really a shame, actually, that we translate them all in English just as G-O-D, God, rather than seeing the beautiful changes and meanings of Emmanuel, God with us, you know, all of these different ones. One that I hadn't really heard about that I think is really, really important, especially for those of us who are gender justice warriors and people who really love outside of the binary. This one is Elohim, and it's a Hebrew word for God. It's not a rare one, right? Like sometimes like you just pick that out of the Bible, that one example. This word for God is used more than 2,500 times throughout the biblical text. And in the stories of creation, it is used almost exclusively. So this word for God is God in creation mode. And I think it's really important that we say that. This is a very well-used word for God in the text. And the word Elohim is actually a plural word. Phoebe, does the next slide have Genesis 1:26? Yes, it does. It says in the text, then God said, let us make humankind or humans in our own image according to our likeness. Now, that is in every single version of the Bible, from King James all the way into the Message, right? Like, regardless of what one you have, Genesis 1:26, and I encourage you to look it up in whatever Bible you have on your family shelf, from even if it's from 100 years ago, it still uses this for Genesis 1:26. This is the verse directly before that verse that we were talking about, Genesis 1:27, where God makes male and female, right? The masculine and the feminine. This is the verse directly before that, and it's in plural. I underlined it, and I didn't change a single word in this one, right? Let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness. So again, we can choose to read the text as it is written to see that Elohim is a plural word for God. And in Genesis 1:26, right before God creates humankind, God says, let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness. For me, that's even more backup, even more fortification in this idea that God is massive and expansive and holds all of us, all of our genders, all of our gender expressions within this identity of being made in the image of the divine in the Imago Dei. So one more, Phoebe. The last one. If that is true, that God says, let us make humankind in our own image and according to our own likeness, to me, that's a very good argument, and I've heard many say it before, that God's preferred pronouns might be they and them. So if we have the he and him that we've had for generations, we have the she and her based on that whole list of God being a midwife, identifying as a mother hen, et cetera, et cetera. And then we add the Elohim from Genesis 1:26 and 27 in a plural form, I just feel like this feels like a God that's much closer to the God that I know that's like, yeah, but he, him. I'm also a she, her. I'm also a they, them. All of this belongs. All of this fits within who we are. I'm not sure how we're doing on timing, but I will respond in the chat if we don't have time to converse about it. I'll be here. You're welcome to reach out. And again, I'm so, so, so grateful for our time together.
Reverend Alba, thank you so much. And we definitely have some time for some questions or comments or wanting you to go a little deeper or whatever into things. So I'm wondering if people want to raise your Zoom hand or put something in the chat. Definitely have a little bit of time, but you've given us a lot to think about and to be challenged and excited by.
I love everything you were saying about the holy in between night and day and dry land and water. And as you were reading that bit, Brianna Sibley put in the chat a great question about intersex people and how that fits into your understanding of this.
Yes. Well, you know, again, like I say, the more I learn, the less I know, because I am such a science dork. Like, I just see God so much in science. So I'm like, tell me all the nerdy details about, I was reading about quasars this morning and black holes. And I was just like trying to wrap my mind around a God that could create something like a black hole. And, you know, it just, it leaves me in humility and wonder. So I will leave that to the biologists, but I will just say that like there's something like 15 different kinds of ways of being intersex, some of them that are visible, some of them that are not, some of them that are about genitalia, and some of them that are not. And so intersex people are such a good evidence of like that creativity that I think actually most of us fit in some way or another, but isn't as genetically studied. I will just caution folks to say that intersex people have their own struggles, particularly around like surgeries on very young babies that those babies and sometimes even their parents don't have much consent over. And so sometimes intersex folks feel like they are used as like, see, y'all, there aren't just two, as like an example. So I always try to be sensitive because folks in the intersex community are actually fighting this for the same thing that a lot of trans people are fighting for in terms of access to healthcare, which is let us decide for our own selves what happens to our bodies. Don't put us through like literally life and body altering surgeries at birth. Let us have a chance to live into our fullness and have our own say over our own bodies. So intersex folks are a perfect example of like, God creates such a variety of what is possible. And even our science is still so nascent in understanding all of that complexity. And thanks be to God, because I don't want that responsibility. But as we learn more, it feels like the more like unfurls about what is possible. So yes, it's a false binary. And sometimes people start with a traditional way of reading the text or a particular way of reading the text and then try to stuff people into that text rather than what we like to do, which is start with creation and see what that tells us about God. And rather than limiting God into small boxes, how do we expand our minds to hold more that we don't know and hold that in humility and listen to our siblings, including our intersex siblings who have a lot of their own work that they're really pushing for around bodily autonomy. You can always reach us at soulforce.org on social media or alba@soulforce on email. We're so excited and delighted to talk about all of the things. I will nerd out with you about the Bible. Yes, I would love, we actually don't have a lot on the names of God, but I would love a resource like that because there are many and they're plentiful and they give us such insights into like, who is this being that we have such affection for and some of us spend our lives serving.
Thanks for listening today, friends. This sermon is so liberating for those of us who have been taught that from the beginning, God and humans are gendered in a rigid binary way. By starting at the beginning, we see that every aspect of who we are is divine. Our gender expressions, sexualities, and embodiment are blessed creations of the God who cannot be contained in narrow categories or under repressive regimes. Tune in each week on this channel to listen to Teología Sin Vergüenza, a podcast that centers queer, feminist, Latina people of faith, gathering people of diverse Christian denominations, pastors, activists, and scholars to discuss gender identity, sex, and pleasure in the context of faith, aiming to heal the wounds of colonizing religion and create a welcoming space for topics often considered taboo in religious spaces. TSB appears each Monday, and on Wednesdays, we bring you love letters from Reverend Sex, an intimate message from our favorite spiritual healer and bruja troublemaker. For all our resources, gatherings, and other great content, visit soulforce.org. And until next month, I am Nadia Arellano. Bye!
Have you ever heard something like, you should be ashamed just for being your true, authentic self? Then Teología Sin Vergüenza might be the place for you. We are queer, trans, feministas from Latin America and its diaspora who aren't ashamed of our faith or our activism. Our weekly conversations offer a space for reflection, analysis, and spiritual reclamation as we try to navigate home, faith, familia, and identity. So grab a cup of coffee, whether it's café con leche, café cubano, café de olla, tinto, chorreado, or americano. Join us for the deep dive into the lives of theologians, elders, activists, and everyday saints as we talk about decolonial faith, gender justice, sexuality, and sacred resistance. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. And for all of those who feel like you aren't enough of this or too much of that, ni de aquí, ni de allá, you belong here. Join us for shameless faith conversations about real life right now that you won't find anywhere else. You might just realize that you are a sinvergüenza too.